the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, in Montgomery County, an earthquake brought in the new year. Slight scare for some residents, especially if you lived in Rockville, Gaithersburg area. Tonight, we are talking all things Montgomery County. The earthquake is just sort of one of the issues we're going to talk about. Crime, violence, minimum wage, opiates, economic development, all the stuff that's going on in the county. So tonight, we're sitting down with the county executive, Mark Elrich. He'll give us an update on what you all should know about what's happening in Maryland's largest county, at least in terms of numbers of folks. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have a question or a comment about what's happening in the county, Montgomery County that is, or a question or comment directed towards the county executive, he is here for you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. County Executive, thank you so much for being with us as usual.
Yeah. I always like joining you guys here.
Yeah. Earthquake, only 2.3, sort of on the Richter scale, but folks felt it, right? Number one, did you feel it?
I apparently slept through it.
Okay. Well, you sleep well then. Good for you. And in terms of the earthquake, you know, we had a more serious one a few years back. You know, many of us in the area felt that. Is that something that the county has to prepare for? Do you have that somewhere in your emergency preparedness in case an earthquake hits?
There's nothing to prepare for for an earthquake. I mean, it hits, it's over usually within like seconds, and then you just deal with the aftermath. So, and you know, because we're East Coast, you don't have the kind of building codes that happen and that you have in areas that have more serious earthquake threats. So far, everything's been mild. Even the one that, because I was in the building a couple of years ago in Rockville when that quake hit, and you could actually feel.
I was in my house in Prince George's County and felt the house move. So there's really not a whole lot that you have paperwork that you would say for residents prepare in this way other than normal procedures if you feel something shaky.
Yes.
Get out of the building.
Well, what are you supposed to stay
get
in
the
parts
tub
of the
or,
building that are less likely to collapse, doorways, I guess, anything with extra structure.
Yeah. So no problems in the county from this quake.
Nothing serious.
Yeah. Any calls from outside of the area, you know, from other regions, what's going on in Montgomery County?
No? Not really. Okay. At least they didn't get to my desk.
All right. Well, we just want to make sure we didn't see you on the nightly news tonight about anything that went down. Let's talk about another issue that is big in our region, really big nationally, right? But in the state of Maryland, at the start of yesterday, minimum wage now is $15 an hour. You guys were already there,
we're already there.
A minimum, and with any business over 50 people, it's what,
1670. If you're 11 to 50, it's 15 right now, and it goes up every year. Mm-hmm. And if you were 10 and under, it was 1450. So those people got the jump on the first from 1450 to 15, and then I guess July 1 every year. We adjusted for inflation. So next year, you know, our highest wage will be over $17 for sure.
So why is Montgomery County ahead of the state? Why did you all already have that $15 an hour where the state was coming behind you in the wake?
Because when I was on the council, I persisted. I mean, I passed the minimum wage bill after I was there for a few years, and I went back and got a second minimum wage bill. We tried to push it. We got it to 15. I had more tiers than I wanted. It was phased in a little bit longer. And, you know, 15 was the call back in 2015. So here we are in 2024. $15 isn't even worth what it was in 24, obviously. So that wage needs to go up. It always should have been tracked with inflation from day one. And, you know, and Congress disconnected it years ago. So I think it's created a major problem. And I try to remind people that, you know, we've got this social safety net, right? We pay, help support families who don't earn enough money to put a roof over their head or feed their kids or health care. We're all paying for that. because businesses refuse to pay people living wage. Let's not be confused. This is not an era where the people getting government support are primarily unemployed. People who get government support are primarily employed. They don't make enough money to meet their basic needs, and the government has to step in and provide these additional services or support for additional services, not because people aren't working, but because where they work will not pay them enough money to live on. And, you know, it's, to me, this is a real problem. And even a $15 minimum wage, big deal. It's like, if you work full time, you make about or a little over $30,000 a year. So if you spend 30% of your income on housing, which is the most you're supposed to spend, that gives you $9,000 a year or $750 a month. You tell me where a person's going to find an apartment for $750 a month. And if you're a couple making minimum wage, where are you going to find, you know, a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment for $1,500 a month? So the wage does not match what people need for decent housing, let alone everything else. And I just, you know, I'm fortunate in Montgomery County we were able to get this through the council. It was a very tight vote, but there were enough people who supported it. A lot of support from, you know, this, you know, the social community, the people who work in housing, the people who work in, you know, food insecurity, and of course the unions. All of them came out and helped support and build the kind of base we needed to pass it.
Now, the numbers that you rattled off, yeah, in terms of, you know, what you need to live, they are daunting. And you used the word problem, I think, sort of twice about the numbers at $15 an hour. On the other side, county executive, some small businesses would say, hey, wait a minute. We think $15 an hour is a problem, and now you're pushing for $20 an hour, and we cannot, especially small businesses, we can't afford that. Is there some legitimacy to that counter argument?
So I actually think no, and this is why. It's one thing if some people are covered by that wage and others aren't, and you're in a situation where you're being forced to pay 20 and somebody else is going to deliver the same, you know, services and they're only paying their workers $12 or $15. And we heard this from businesses who were, you know, in fact, this is one of the first meetings I had was with the chamber, and it's like, oh, you're going to make Montgomery County worse than everybody else, and people are going to go to other counties. Well, D.C. joined us. I reached out to D.C. and Prince George's County. I said, so this is the problem. Let's fix the problem. All of us go together the first time. All of us went together the first time. D.C. and us went together the second time. Virginia finally got on the bandwagon and adapted 15. So if you're a small business, there's no place else to go where the employers are paying less than 15. And that, to me, is the key. If everybody asks to wage their raises, I expect everybody to raise their prices. And you'll raise your prices, but you'll be competitive because everybody else has the same wage rate you do. And that's the importance of doing this, in my mind, collectively, among all the jurisdictions, preferably now with the state, is if that becomes the base wage, prices are going to reflect that. And frankly, I'd have no problem paying a little extra for my hamburger. I would rather pay more than know that either people are, you know, not getting enough money and they're not going to be able to support themselves, or that I'm going to wind up paying for it out of tax dollars, because this is just all the more need for people to be subsidized by the government. I'd rather just pay the wages straight out.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're into the second day of the new year. And as this new year begins, we have the county executive from Montgomery County with us tonight, talking about all issues related to Montgomery County. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is your chance to speak to the leader of Montgomery County, if you like. If you have a question or you have a comment, Mark Elrich is with us tonight. Phone lines are still open. County Executive, let's go to public safety, right?
Yeah.
That's always a major issue. It's been a year in the DMV. This is just not, you know, what Montgomery County and the district, and especially Prince George's County, crime is up, carjackings are up. You've seen crime in one of your highly populated areas in Silver Spring, mm-hmm, and in parts of the county. Give me your sense as now we're about to start the new year, but you're reflecting back on the previous year of the state of crime and public safety in the county. Well, how do you feel about where the county is now?
Look, I wish we were in a better place. We are part of a national phenomenon, not just regional. And I think a number of things are at work here. One is, people became really unglued during COVID. And, it's hard because, a lot of us don't feel like we became unglued. So it's hard to understand what happened. But clearly, things happened. Things happened with our kids that interrupted their normal growth and development. And I think it's compounded by other social factors. If you feel like generally you're not going to be successful, and then you compound that by going through a couple of years of isolation and even having your normal social development interrupted, I think people who feel helpless and don't feel like they're going to have a future tend to be more inclined to do things that indicate, like, what difference does it make what I do? Or if I'm not going to get this the right way, I'm going to get it one way or the other. And I feel that there are a lot of people out there who don't feel they're going to have the opportunity to be successful, don't have the opportunity to even make it, let alone be successful. And I think, we've got to think about that. I mean, we talked about wages before. If you look at your life and you think this is all I'm going to make, and you're not going to be putting a roof over your head, it's kind of depressing. And I get where people get disconnected in that way. And so I think it's a problem. You see a lot of youth involved in crime, probably at higher levels than we had before. I was a former school teacher, so I listened to kids talk about their sense of their place in the world. And, you don't realize how dark it gets until you have a room full of 10-year-olds tell you they don't think they're going to live to be 25. If that's how you look at the world, then what you do doesn't really matter. And I'm concerned about that. I think, when I talk to other teachers, they get the same sense of despair from a lot of kids. We need to do a better job. And, I think schools have to do a better job. We talk about the achievement gap. When something's been around for 40 years, you really haven't addressed it effectively. And I think, the school systems need to think a lot harder about how they teach and what they teach. I think if kids are in households that are economically unstable and they see the kind of tension, fear of losing housing, I really wonder, what it would have been like if I was 9 years old and had my parents talking about we're going to be kicked out of here at the end in a month. And, you're moving because you're kicked out on an annual basis. That puts kids under a lot of stress. And so we've got to think about what we do to reduce the stress on families, reduce the stress on children, to make sure that people feel they've got an opportunity to succeed and not simply, people talk about generational poverty. When I have kids talk to me, teenagers, about themselves, and I'm just in a cycle of generational poverty, that they're beginning to think they're not getting out of this cycle. So I think we need to do more. And I think, we've talked about what happened to this Maryland state, both D.C. and Maryland, and the changes in policy. One thing I feel real strongly about, trying to put an end to the school-to-prison pipeline was a very good idea. The problem is ending that pipeline the problem was the prison part of that pipeline. We need to have a pipeline that takes kids who are having trouble and struggling and gets some help.
I think the counter to that, before we go to break, especially if we just sort of focus on carjackings, and we know now that so much of that is involving young people under 18. And I think you've got a community that is saying, I hear what you're saying, county executive, but at some point, the punishment may have to meet the crime. There may have to be some kind of signal out there to say, listen, you won't be able to sort of go into juvenile detention after carjacking someone and get out in a month and then have some older guy or older person supervising these carjackings. So either there has to be something with public safety where you get to those older folks or getting to the younger people. I'm sort of going on my thing here, but we're going to take a break, so I'm not going to let you. I'm going to let you jump in on the backside.
Come back in on the other end of the break.
Because I know in your top three things that's happened in the county, you mentioned public safety and hiring more police.
Yep.
So I do want to get a little bit more into that, but I want to give you some time to be able to address that. Because the music is playing. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Lewis and Ron, you're on the line now. Please stay there. We're going to get to you as we continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR 96.3. This discussion continues again on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Our guest tonight in conversation is Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. County Executive, again, hold your thought. I want to let Lewis jump into the conversation, and we'll pick up where we left off. Lewis is calling from Upper Marlboro. Go right ahead, Lewis, with your question or comment.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment on the the wage.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make a comment on your minimum wage.
Okay.
And I really don't understand why we can't come up with policy that's not one size fits all. It makes sense to me from an economic standpoint that you're able to say to Walmart, you made $1 trillion in profit this year. You deserve to pay this amount for a minimum wage, as opposed to a mom and pop shop that's doing five employees. You're not held to the same standard. I mean, if you go back to the basics of doing a block grant, you have large. I worked for the Department of Transportation. You had large transit companies like NYCTA. You had WMATA. You have all those agencies. They are held to a different formula for the amount of money that they get, as opposed to small transit agencies across the country that can't produce the same people.
Okay,
so
I think we got it, Lewis. Just hold your thought. Let me let the county exec get it. I get the gist of your question.
I'll go back to what I said before. If you were in an uncompetitive situation, I get your issue. But if you're a small mom and pop shop and everybody has to raise their wage, then everybody else is going to be competitive with you. And when people did an analysis of how much like a hamburger would cost at McDonald's if people were made the minimum wage, it winds up to be a trivial amount of money. And people don't realize that. So you think you're going from 13 to 15, it does not result in every hamburger you sell having to go up a dollar. Doesn't mean that every sub you sell has to go up a dollar. So these are absorbable costs as long as the playing field is level. And that's the point of trying to do the wages this way. And I would say, if you're in a mom and pop shop and you're getting paid not minimum wage, but $12 or $13 an hour, how do you expect your employees to live? How do you expect any loyalty? How do you expect people to look at their job as, I'm going to do the best I can for you because you're doing the best for me? You've got people who are coming to work every day, putting in their time, and they can't even put a roof over their heads and they can't support their families. Those aren't going to be good, happy employees. And I think, we've got to look at this from a broader perspective.
Can I respond?
Very, very quickly, Lewis.
Okay. My response is that it's just like working for the federal government or working for private industry. If you choose to work for the federal government, you don't get paid as much as people who work for the private industry. So my point would be is that a mom and pop shop might employ a high school employee. They may employ someone who just to be able to work. If there's always a situation where you can have people who want to work and will be willing to work for the money that they're being paid, because of the fact that it's a concerted choice.
It's so not a choice. It's because they've got no choice. They work these jobs. First place, they most often don't have skills. So they have very limited skills. They can't get better jobs with more skills. And you could argue that that's a failure of our education system. But people take the jobs that they can get. And that doesn't mean this is a happy choice they made. It's a necessary choice to put money on the table, however little it is. And I just don't believe in encouraging a race to the bottom. It's not a good thing.
Thank you, Lewis. Appreciate your call. Good points made throughout. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we go back to the phone lines, County Executive, yeah. I want to give you an opportunity to go back when I was making the point about being tougher on some of these young folks, and maybe a signal needs to be out there, because I think you've got a lot of residents throughout the DMV who are frustrated that you have so much recidivism in terms of some of these crimes that are being committed. And how do you send a message? Or is it not about messaging, but getting to the root of the issue, meaning are there more provocateurs, more Svengalis that are helping these young people create and commit these crimes?
There are the Svengalis. There are the older people who take advantage of the fact that youth aren't going to be prosecuted. But I would argue that, I mean, we don't think about this, but, you know, if you sentence somebody to jail, it's not the 6 months you serve, the 3 months you serve. Those jail sentences turn out to be lifetime sentences, because you will find yourself unable to get a job if you've got a criminal record. There are places that won't rent an apartment to you if you've got a criminal record. So you haven't just punished a person for the time they spend behind bars, but you saddle them with something from which could bar them from employment. And I pretty much guarantee you that if people are barred from employment, they're going to find other ways to put money on the table, which means, I think, is a large driver of recidivism. If you walk out of jail and no one's going to employ you, you're going to go back to the thing you did before and hope you can get the money, which is not to say the alternative is to do nothing. And there, I actually believe that a lot of, you know, when parents say, don't give my kid back to me, they're out of control, there needs to be a place where kids can go and go through rehabilitation, counseling, and things like that. Get them away from the drugs if drugs are a problem. Get them away from their environment if their environment's a problem. And rehabilitate these kids. When I was growing up,
I was going to say, you say there needs to be a place.
Yes.
So again, I'm
playing, No jail sentence.
I'm playing contrarian. They would say, okay, county executive, is there such a place in the county? And if not, are you pushing for that?
Yes.
And
I've raised this issue with the state, for example, state legislators. They created these laws about prosecution and everything. I get they're trying to stop kids from going to jail. They needed to make an investment in other places to put kids to get the help they need. If all you're going to do is say, you're not going there, go back to your parents who say you're out of control, or just go back to, you know, living or couch surfing where you're not under anybody's control, is not a good solution. There needs to be something. There needs to be a consequence. When I was growing up, I remember that if a parent, this was the great threat to my friends, a parent would say you're out of control. They go to a judge and they'd say you're out of control. There were like three institutions in Maryland. And I had friends go to Waxter's and the other two places because their parents declared them out of control. There needs to be some kind of alternative that provides the kind of counseling the kids need, and to try to develop in them a sense of perspective and hope that there's a way to do this. But punishing people with jail sentences and criminal records is going to wind up in the long term being counterproductive. So if we're going to spend money, let's spend it on something that heals somebody, not on something that punishes them and then puts them back out on the street again in a worse shape than they were before.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking all things Montgomery County tonight. Our guest is the County Executive, Mark Elrich. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jeff is calling from Hillcrest Heights. Go right ahead, Jeff, with your question or comment.
Thank you. And Mr. Elrich, I was listening to your comments, and I couldn't agree more with just about everything you said. I've been a teacher for 25 years, 17 were in Maryland. But this problem really starts, as you know, the only way to really solve it is to get into the schools. I mean, that's the last and only place, because you can't go into people's homes and tell people how to live, but you can model ways to handle and solve problems inside a school system. And I think part of the issue is, as you know, testing for over 30 years has really torn down that one sort of lining in the schools that allow teachers and counselors to really help kids, you know, outside of what their job description might have been to teach English, as I do, but you always were able to help kids. And now, you know, it seems it's harder to do. The problems are bigger, and, schools don't have the resources. But I've often thought, and after this I'm going to get off and let you respond, but in Montgomery County and in D.C. and in PG, I think the three districts get together and they say, hey, let's develop a school that's outside of the city, outside in the country, where parents can opt in as early as the fourth grade, and their kids can be out of the away from the crime, away from the problems, and be given an opportunity to grow and to learn safely in an environment that's not threatening. And, you know, you open that up to parents, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know a single mother who, if it were done the right way, wouldn't opt in. I mean, who wants to be, you know, not all of them are going to be, but who wants to be on TV, you know, talking about how my son is gone? Because, you know, that kid that got shot in D.C. by that D.C. worker was horrible.
Okay, let the county execs.
I think you make a good point. I mean, schools in some way have, you know, aren't doing the stuff they used to be able to do. The testing, I think, was a big problem. When if you look at the state test, you know, the school system has to test kids when they come back to school in September, because you don't get enough information out of these high stakes tests to even tell you how to properly place a kid in the classroom. And, you know, I graded those tests one summer back in around 2006, I guess. And what shocked me was the way the state was giving credit for wrong answers. I mean, creating a false sense that your kids are doing well, or not being willing to deal with kids who aren't doing well and figuring out how do you get them to do better, rather than figuring out how do I jigger the scoring so it appears that you're doing better. You're going to close the achievement gap on paper, but you're not closing any achievement gap in the real world. So that's one level of the problem. But I agree with you about, you know, when you're talking about a school like that, having a school like that or schools like that would be a benefit to families where the kids are really struggling. And I think, you know, my concern is that if the kids don't do well, there's nothing worse than getting a sense that you're going to be a failure in class. And if you were a teacher, so you've probably seen the same thing, where kids who decide they're not going to be successful, the worst thing is to be a failure. So the kids start, I would say, manifesting a behavior where you don't do your work and you tell everybody in the class that I don't care, because if I don't care, I don't fail. And so the way you emotionally protect yourself from a sense of failure is to act in a way that you're not even trying. And that makes this problem even worse. And these are real things that happen to kids. I don't think we think enough about, you know, what's going through their heads. They're not bad people. They're not starting out and, you know, deciding how bad I can be. But if you feel life is going to be helpless, difficult, painful, whatever, you know, you find ways to protect yourself emotionally, and sometimes tuning out and dropping out mentally is a way of protecting yourself emotionally.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff. Good advice. 202 from teacher to teacher. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before we go to break, let's get another call in if we can. Ron is calling from Prince George's County. Go right ahead, Ron. Are you there, Ron? Okay. Give us a call back, Ron. Let's go to Tiffany calling. Tiffany, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I like the theory that Mike has said, that he's from Montgomery County. My cousin lives in Montgomery County. She loves Montgomery County. Oh, gosh. So I love the fact that you have said that you got the other areas to join in with you, and you waited for them until they were ready to actually join, because I've never heard of somebody in no office trying to get another area to join, to get all the areas to do the same thing. That's what we need. Everything. Everything. Like, all the way down to crime. All the areas need to do the same thing. Once everybody is realizing, even down to the you know, the driving fast stuff on the road, once they see that nobody's playing with them, guess what? They're all going to stop, because they have nowhere to go other than get on a plane and leave.
All right, well, so County Executive, with Tiffany's point sort of piggybacking that, how much collaborative work happens between, say, you and County Exec Alsobrooks, Mayor Bowser, even maybe within Howard County, but we kind of really look at Montgomery, Prince George's, and D.C. on that border. I remember last year, maybe right there on the border of Prince George's and D.C., Alsobrooks. I'm not sure if you were there, and the police chief, and talking about crime in that situation. If we're standing on the outside and we're sort of hovering and looking about, do you guys really get together and put your heads together, or is it just
to
do
be
your
honest,
own thing? Yeah, be honest.
Not enough.
Mm-hmm. Why so?
I think because, you know, particularly like crime issues, how you prosecute, what's legal, what's not legal, and everything else are statewide issues. So we can, you know, pontificate and rant and rave all we want about it, but the fact is we need some changes. So, if, you know, for example, the only people who are going to be able to fund adequately alternative locations or sites for kids to go to is going to be the state. We mentioned driving. You know, we had this horrific accident. It wasn't no accident. Mm-hmm. We had the guy who lost, police officer who right. lost
State
his
trooper.
Legs
yeah. mm-hmm.
to a maniac mm-hmm. who aimed his car at him and ran over him. And they had known about him. He did this all day. He would go up to police officers and then taunt them and then go off speeding and driving mm-hmm. like crazy. And we don't pursue people who are speeding because we're trying not to trigger an accident. But they knew what the car was. If we had laws that treated that not as a traffic offense, but as a criminal offense, which would have been fine with me, there would have been a way to deal with somebody like that. So we need to, you know, have the state, I think, be more responsive to some of these kinds of issues and sometimes take hard positions. I mean, every time
you legislate, isn't bad. Do you think that may happen? Because in your top 10, I think you started with number 10 and you were saying... I can't remember the words you used, but basically you said your relationship with the governor,
yeah.
the new governor, that was one of your top 10. And so that's a positive thing. So do you feel that you have the governor's ear in the manner that you need to have it, that he is open to these types of suggestions?
I think he's open to this because he sees the kind of social inequities that the rest of us do. He knows this stuff, knows it better than me because he came out of an environment a little different than my environment. And I would say that, you know, he's interested in, you know, he's a real interested in trying to correct this. And it means that he and others are going to have to make some hard decisions. The hardest part about all this, we have to have the courage to pay for it. If we're just going to be upset about it, but then say, well, we don't have the money to pay for it, then none of this changes. You know, if you don't have alternative treatment, if you, you know, for drug addicts, if you're not going to treat them, they're going to continue doing what they're doing. So if we want this, we're going to need to take steps. So, you know, my county's pretty aggressive. We put a lot of money into social services, I think certainly more than most. But, you know, it's not adequate in and of itself.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Phone lines are still open. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, County Executive, I want to talk to you a little bit about opioids and what's going on with that in the county. And sounds like it's not big, but plastic bags, it's a big issue right now in our region, especially as the year starts. We'll get into that and maybe a couple of more things. And if we have any calls, we'll take those. Phone lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Our guest is Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich. County Executive, let's talk a little bit in our last few moments, a few issues. Opioids, how are you tackling that issue in the county?
More counseling, more people on the street. More education with parents because they don't necessarily know what their kids are doing. They don't know what the signs of it are. They don't know, like, even looking for foils, like, around the house. Like, why do you have these little squares of foils? So we're doing everything we can to try to increase awareness. We're working with community groups. You know, I think in a lot of ways, community groups have deeper reach in the community than the government does. And possibly higher levels of trust sometimes than we do, with something we was made very clear during COVID. And so we're doing everything we can to provide more information. And you've got to treat it seriously. You know, one of the problems with addiction in the state, or these kind of problems in the state, is you can't put somebody into a clinic unless it's voluntary. And so you could have somebody, you know, who overdoses, they could be saved by Narcan, they could go back a week later and do the same thing and be saved by Narcan. You have no ability to say, you need to go, we're going to put you in a facility, we're going to get you detoxed, and we're going to get you help to deal with your addiction. And you need to be able to do that sometimes. I mean, I'm a big believer in civil liberties, but, you know, people put themselves and other people at risk through this behavior, and, you know, we need to try to help them stop it. You know, I mean, stopping it by dying is not a really good solution.
One of the big issues at the start of the year, it seems like a small thing, but when you're talking about the environment, I know climate change is one of your top 10 issues. Plastic bags in oceans and waterways clogging up things, that affects the environment in Prince George's County and Anne Arundel County and Frederick. I believe all three of those at the start of the year are banning plastic bags. In Montgomery County, you don't have a ban, but
you have a tax.
But there is a tax that if you use the bags, it's like 10 cents on each bag, right? Why not follow the template of these other
three? I've asked my staff to draft a bill to ban plastic bags like everybody else. This is silly. I mean, the tax was meant to help pay the cost of cleaning up. But who wants to clean up? And then you got a product that's not recyclable anyway.
When you say clean up, we clean up bags like, so that are littering?
Yeah, we have to, you know, we clean up streams, we, you know, we clean up roadways.
But then you keep allowing bags
but
to keep
then you
going
steeple,
back in.
Yes, so 10 cents wasn't enough of a deterrent to get people to have their own bags. So we just sort of flat out ban them, and I'm going to support doing that. You know, I'm in Montgomery, I'm in Montgomery County, so I recycle. And where I am, I have even food recycling, which is something the county is going to be moving to. And when I look at my trash, the stuff I throw out, when you know, I've got my separate bottles, cans, and everything, my trash bag is basically plastic bags inside of it, almost entirely plastic bags. And it's kind of like mind-boggling because if my trash would almost disappear if the plastic bags were out of that trash bag. So I'm hoping we go ahead and do this. We're making progress on
other. Would you follow what is happening in Prince George's? I know in particular because I live in that county. You can, if you don't bring your reusable bag, they will offer you paper bags, but then they charge 10 cents per paper bag in the county. Would that be the model that you would use in Montgomery County? Because you heard some of the many of the residents where it's going to take a while, you know, they were shocked and they said, well, I got to pay 10 cents a bag. I don't like that. I think that those should be offered free. You know, I'm old enough to remember when paper bags were the free bags. You weren't being charged for the bags.
So, you know, paper bags, right, are taxed in Montgomery County like plastic is. So you're paying 10 cents a bag anyway. You could leave the 10 cent thing on there. You know, I kind of like am neutral about
but do you have to tax the bag?
Well,
I mean,
The shop can just, you know, they bear the cost. I'm sure they figure out what it costs them to buy bags when they're pricing everything else. It's just part of, you know, mm-hmm. the amount of your expenses that you have to cover with your sales price.
But if you're charging, 10 cents, right, to use a paper bag, like it is in Prince George's County, but you weren't charging prior to new legislation, right, to use a plastic bag. Is that telling us how cheap it was to produce the plastic bags? Because the counter argument could be, well, wait a minute. Before all this new legislation came out, we used bags. There were plastic bags. There was no charge for them. So now if we're not using plastic bags, but we have to use paper bags, why are you charging us for a bag you now provide for us that we have to pay for?
So that would is an interesting argument. Mm-hmm. I will say that. I mean, I feel, you know, the point that I probably agree with you on is if it's part of the cost of doing business, you're paying for it in the product. If it's paper and I put it in with my paper recycling, which is what I do with my paper bags, then it's just part of the overall recycling. And, you know, I'm not paying a tax on all the other paper I use, so maybe I don't need to pay a tax. The government doesn't have a cost of, you know, in processing your paper bag is distinct from every other thing that I'm recycling. So maybe I don't care so much about that. So this would make me think about it. The only thing I would think about is the paper bag getting contaminated. If it's from my regular trash, then that paper bag's not going to be usable as recyclable. So maybe there's a vague argument for it there. But there's something worth thinking about.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and so in that 2 minutes, I want to sort of go to something that's been created out of your office, or at least what you saw as your, it was the county executive's top 10 for 2023, right? I'm going to start from 10 and go down. Working with Maryland's new governor at 10. Number 9, free access to county fitness centers. 8, Cross Vines opens. That's a winery that you've started, your idea. 7, creating digital equity. 6, combating climate change. 5, investing in Montgomery County public schools. 4, no tolerance for hate in Montgomery County. 3, addressing public safety concerns. 2, producing affordable housing and stabilizing rent. And number 1, Montgomery County hits record low unemployment and major economic development wins. Now, in 1 minute, obviously, at number 1, you can't get all of that in addressing that. So I'm just going to ask you about number 1 with our minute. Montgomery County hits record low unemployment and major economic development wins. Give me one of those economic development wins that you're most happy about.
Well, the latest big one is United Therapeutics. To making this expansion deal with us where we swapped our garage. They're going to build us another garage, but they're getting a piece of land where they're going to build essentially a lung factory. I know that sounds far out, but that's what they're going to do. And it's going to be a boost to employment, and it's also like another breakthrough science. I mean, they're very much into organ replacement, and so we're going to be a part of that. Along with that, AstraZeneca, which is already big in Montgomery County, announced a major expansion in Montgomery County. So we're seeing life sciences companies locate there. When I came into office, we had no labs under construction. We've got millions of square feet now that we've added in lab space and that is going to be planned to add. So we're seeing real growth in a sector that we were strong in to begin with, but now it's actually growing. So it's better to be growing and strong than stagnant and strong.
He is Mark Elridge, and he is the county executive for Montgomery County. County executive, thank you so much, as usual, for being with us. And the next time you're in, we'll talk a little bit about more growth and that crossover vines. We'll get into a little bit, because I know that's your baby with wine. Not to say that you drink it, even though you may.
Although I do.
But nothing wrong with that. But the idea of what's happening in the county. But we're out of time. But we'll get more into that. Thank you so much,
county executive.
I
always like being on the show.
That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, January 2nd. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.